Welcome to the ANews podcast. This is episode 36 for 11/3/2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the nonsectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Many are aware of the wild turn of events at the two book fairs last weekend. But as a brief recap, in Los Angeles, book fair organizers attempted to force Little Black Cart to leave because they do not like the content of some of LBC's work. These attempts were themselves thwarted when the locals of Leimert Park forced the entire book fair to leave because they did not like the content of the book fair. And in London, some attendees harassed and attacked a radical feminist because they did not like the content of a flyer being distributed. These actions presumably fall under the banner of no platforming, a practice of banning certain types of harmful speech. No platforming is often a counter-argument to fanatical arguments for free speech by those who want to spew hateful rhetoric. No platforming is what gets Richard Spencer punched in the face. It is what gets Milo Yiannopoulos banned from Berkeley. But should it be what gets LBC kicked out of a book fair or a radical feminist attacked? I live in the U.S., and when I first read about the London Book Fair incident, I didn't think much of it. It sounded like someone was spreading hateful rhetoric about trans people who responded understandably by defending themselves. This made even more sense in the context of the Los Angeles Book Fair, since one motivation of the locals was not to have, quote, queer shit in their neighborhood. Unrelatedly, a few days later, I was reading about radical feminism and learned that it is a movement interested in raising questions about what gender and sex means in the context of trans. I learned of another book fair where two radical feminist speakers were violently assaulted for the content of their presentations. I've also learned of several other incidents that complicated the issue of trans and radical feminism. I learned of a situation when a trans woman sued a rape crisis center because they refused to hire her due to their all-women policy. I learned of a midwife association who will no longer use the term pregnant woman because they were informed the term was transphobic. I learned of lesbians who frequently receive death threats for saying they don't want to sleep with trans women. I even saw some of the death threats on Twitter. It started to give context to all of the rabid hostility I've seen online against so-called TERFs, TERFs. And as a woman, it felt all too familiar. Once again, someone who was born with a penis is threatening me with violence if I don't get in line and shut the fuck up. I've also seen nasty intolerance from the other side. I found a flyer that was being distributed at the London Book Fair to be offensive. But the point is that these issues are complex. There is a qualitatively different nature to feminists asking questions about gender or Little Black Cart asking questions about violence than there is to Matthew Heimbach openly advocating for the extermination of Jews. And it is difficult to articulate what that difference is. But when we know platform, these voices, we are left with individuals taking it upon themselves to police discourse and shut down any discussion they don't like. That can only result in the most authoritarian voices having power over what is said. It is important to advocate for and amplify marginalized voices who are the targets of violence, and to diminish and invalidate the voices of those who wish to oppress others. But anyone who even remotely tolerates the actions of Antifa must understand, at least implicitly, that violence is complicated. It is not always unwarranted. It is not always avoidable. It is at least something worth discussing. And there is a difference between discussing violence and endorsing it. Barring discordant voices in anarchist spaces for simply raising questions about unsavory topics should be deeply troubling to anarchists. These are conversations we need to find ways to have without providing space for disingenuous authoritarian voices to encroach and dominate. And no platforming is not the way to accomplish that goal. This editorial was sent to us by A. Muse. What's new this week on pluralism, tolerance, and tracking, the advancing persecution of anarchists in Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil? From Anonymous. This is more information on Operation Ibero, which is sounding bad. Quote, in the operation, the police confiscated books, which appeared in the search warrants as dangerous materials, computers, cell phones, xerographic material for making shirts, demonstration banners, and PET bottles stuffed with recycling material used as bricks for bioconstruction. The anarchist book fair that was supposed to take place in Porto Alegre this weekend was canceled by decision of the organizers. This cancellation was the form of protest they agreed upon in the face of yet another attack by the state police. This time, the egregious Operation Ibero, in Greek mythology, the son of chaos, produced accusations against the militants and the stupid spectacle of linking anarchists with fascists and Nazis, etc. This type of link is not surprising. It is inherent to the police and the state that they take their own stupidity for intelligence. It is not enough to say that protest is not a crime, because this is nothing more than the old lie that, depending on the occasion, supports pluralism, that tolerates even a fascist, but does not hesitate to try to destroy anarchists and aims to distinguish common prisoners from political prisoners. Silly mistake. Unquote.
Interview. Eclipse Phase, the Anarchist RPG, from Freedom Press UK. Some people want to mix their politics with their popular entertainment. This is understandable, of course. One point to play is practicing different ways of doing things with fewer consequences. It's fun to read about, watch, play as someone who has the kind of questions that we have in real life. But those of us who have read too many novels that purport to be anarchists tend to look at these efforts with a jaundiced eye. Coming at enjoyment with too much of an agenda generally screws up the project. Too much earnestness, too much linear thinking, not to mention too much planning, and taking things for granted. You could say that fiction and play are best at asking questions, and politics is generally about people who think they have answers. I'm saying all this as someone who plays role-playing games with a terrifying single-mindedness, and also someone who hasn't even seen a screenshot of this game. It's hard to imagine that it could beat the Anarchist in Vampire, The Masquerade, Bloodlines, but maybe I'm wrong. Quote, question regarding human augmentation. How is EP tended to handle the threat that in the future, a heavily upgraded, functionally immortal elite might eventually simply out-tech us? Response. We've taken the view that technology empowers everyone, not just the ruling elites. Yes, the elites have more resources and gain early access, but there are several mechanisms countering that. First is the cyberpunk maxim that the street makes its own use for things, meaning that even technology deployed for purposes of control is often subverted and repurposed. Unquote.
Anti-Phoenix pamphlet, The Phoenix Verdict, Defendants Acquitted, from antiphoenix.noblogs.org. This is an 8-page pamphlet from a translated interview originally in Czech on the court hearings and the situation in general. Quote, this long court hearing was about five anarchists, three of them accused of plotting a terrorist attack on a train carrying military paraphernalia. Two of them were accused of knowing about such plans and not stopping them. Two of these five people were also accused of preparing an attack with Molotov cocktails on police cars during the eviction of the Chapulka squat. Basically, according to the deployed police agents, there were in total five people and three different crimes involved. And this is all just for Phoenix 1, because some of these people are facing further accusations in the context of Phoenix 2. In the group where the five accused were involved, there were two police agent infiltrators. These two individuals actively prepared both attacks, and they also partly started them up. However, the judge did not identify their actions as a provocation, just because the materials that would detect the provocation are not available, unquote.
LA Anarchist Book Fair Collective statement about today's events. The controversy of the week, so last week, was drama around the LA Book Fair organizers making a series of mistakes that ran a gamut of silly to perhaps not silly. Whether people think that it was a mistake to try to get LBC not to come is one thing, but the errors of A, organizing in a location they don't have real ties to, B, not having a plan for notoriously bad at following directions projects crashing their party, C, not taking the race politics of their project seriously, D, trying to foist the blame for the misfire onto another project, and E, ultimately coming back to the location under cover of a gentrifying and liberal shield like an art walk. All that makes me want to go Rambo my own self. Quote, with this said, we must also address what happened with regards to the presence of Little Black Cart at Lemire Park today. The collective decided prior to the book fair to not have Little Black Cart table at the event because of their continued distribution of ATASA. Giving platform to ITS and its supporters does not adhere to our collective principles, and we made our position very clear on this matter. After giving them our decision, members of LBC surprised us by setting up a table and refused to leave when asked. Our collective knew that we had the possibility of LBC attempting to table. When they arrived, we informed them to leave in a non-violent manner. While this was occurring, we were also trying to alleviate conflict with certain community members. LBC's eco-fascist material and display, needless to say, did not help our efforts to work with the community members. Unquote.
Restless Spectres of the Anarchist Dead, from CrimeThink. Quote, this year is the centennial of two revolutions in Russia, one in which the people toppled the Tsar and another in which the Bolsheviks seized state power. Within 20 years, the Bolsheviks had executed or imprisoned most of those who carried out the revolution. Today, as hashtag 1917 live trends on Twitter, we should remember the hashtag 1917 undead, the anarchists who strove to warn humanity that statist paths toward social change will never bring us to freedom. Some of them, like Fania and Aaron Barron, were murdered in cold blood by authoritarian communists in the Soviet Union. Others managed to survive, betrayed by their supposed comrades, to witness the totalitarian results of the Bolshevik coup. Their voices cry out to us today from the grave. Let's listen. Unquote. This is a series of thumbnails of some significant historical anarchists: Bakunin, Trotsky, Kropotkin, Makhno, Lev Cherny, Fania Barron, Aaron Barron, Berkman, Goldman, and many, many more. If you don't like reading history but would still like to have a sense of where people stood, the survey can get you started. However, I found the first commenter on this thread on Anarchist News quite to the point. Here's a part of it. Quote, "The totalitarian and repressive politics of today's socialists do not really require those things. They are relational terror. They are community-driven and community-based purges of individuals, and their ostracization and demonization. Today's socialists are similar to the Catholic devouts, who installed and spread their party throughout society, changed it at the surface level, and installed a heavier layer of social control, one which was mostly horizontal and aggressively entryist. They were the invisible party of the post-Reformation Catholic society, and all they created was more and more control and repressive moralist dynamics. Stop looking at what the statist socialists were 100 years back, and rather look at the sociocracy they're now aggressively enforcing at many levels in society." Unquote.
What should an anarchist book fair set out to achieve? From onuncertainground.wordpress.com, a site on, quote, "radical news and views with an anarchist twist from the south of Essex," unquote. This piece is about the London Book Fair, which happened the same weekend as the LA Book Fair. The question of the title is, of course, entirely appropriate, but one of the reasons that book fairs have been as successful as they have been for the past 10 years or so is because they can cover a variety of goals necessary in a scene that is as split and varied as anarchists are. This piece makes a plea for book fairs to be places where newcomers can be comfortable. While this person's understanding of anarchy is very different from mine, the question of how newcomers get their fingers dirty with anarchy could be an interesting one. Quote, "If I was a curious newcomer to the book fair, one not well versed in gender politics and was a witness to what went on in the confrontations, my reaction would have been, what the fuck is going on here? And my response would have been to walk out and dismiss the idea of anarchism as a viable political option. Seriously, is this the face of the London Anarchist Book Fair Collective wants to show to newcomers, particularly new contacts we may want to bring along in the future, and especially to anyone from the estate surrounding the book fair venue? What happened from mid-afternoon onwards hasn't done the movement any favors at a time where we have to be focused on drawing in as many people as possible," unquote.
Free Radical Radio Writings, some spooky thoughts on why cannibalism is better than sex. At base, this seems like a reflection on why sex holds the position it does in this culture and could be seen as an argument for eating as something that deserves more ritual, more respect, that is a more fundamental relationship with the world, as is breathing, but I guess the Buddhists have breathing covered. Along the way, the piece says fairly straightforward things like all sex involves power negotiations. I would argue that all interactions between people, and sometimes within the same person, involve power negotiations, but fine. I don't find the pro-cannibalism argument that strong myself, but I've already said that I lean vegetarian. Quote, "Eating your own kind is perfectly normal outside human society. The more closely related your meal is to you, the more closely its nutrient profile will match your needs, making human flesh the healthiest meal you can eat. This is also why so many people fear diseases spreading through cannibalism. However, it might be true that cannibalism actually reduces chances of infection by directly killing parasites in infected victims and by reducing the number of susceptible hosts. Hence, why most mammals continue the practice, despite so many claims that it's fated for an evolutionary advantage. Cannibalism is as much a function of reproduction as sex. The mothers of rodents, fish, amphibians, bears, cats, dogs, primates, and more eat extra or weak babies they cannot care for. A newborn Sicilian's first meal is its parents' flesh," unquote.
Recapitulating alterity, halas as subaltern crossroads, from extinction.global, a remarkably badly designed website. This is an article on Greece that is both historical, economic, and geopolitical. Interestingly, it uses Lord Byron as a lens. Quote, Lord Byron extricated himself from troublesome affairs in England, only to locate himself in the midst of the tumult which, through a meandering and violent history, inevitably gave rise to the extant Greek state. On observing the tensions along which the impulses of conflict resonated, Byron entered the discursive fray in the sympathy of the Greek nation as it sought its severance from Ottoman rule, writing the passages above from Cephalonia on the 30th of November, 1823, published along with other pertinent doings and sayings of Byron in Telegrafo Greco, an Italian language weekly of the period published from Missolonghi, where Byron had taken up residence. Unquote.
Porto Alegre, Brazil, When Anarchy Disturbs, Library Chaos Statement about the Prosecution Against Anarchists, from Act for Freedom, translated by Tormentas de Fogo. More information about the fucked up police activity against anarchists in Porto Alegre. Quote, the repression against anarchists shows two things. First, to present terrorists on screen serves as a TV show to turn the spotlight away from issues such as corruption, political police discredit, and slow genocide through economic reforms. That they now try to solve the facts of 2013 and chase a book and literature clearly shows a spectacular attempt to hide the growing attack on the population, to depoliticize through threats and spread fear, even to read, evidently democratic practices. And the second thing that presents is an anti-anarchist persecution is that anarchy disturbs. When we speak of anarchy that disturbs, we are clearly not talking about well-behaved boys and girls acting within the limits imposed by power. We do not speak of people who have laws in their bodies and hearts drawing their limits of action. When we speak of anarchy that disturbs, we speak of such a strong insubordination of people and groups that have been able to interrupt the normality of the power square, to paralyze the city, to break the symbols of militarization. In Haiti, to burn the vehicles that seize, and they kill, dragging like horses of the Inquisition. Claudia, we do not forget your death. Unquote.
Podcast, The Final Straw Radio, Betsy Rash Gilman on Movement for a New Society, Anarchism, and Organizing, an hour and a half. Sean starts at 1:25. This time he talks about a plethora of monkeys. What's a group of monkeys? A mob? Bedeviling officials in Lebanon, Ohio, the city that holds Sean's prison. Sean, accused of being a leader of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, you can look that shit up. Goes to town on this. Coincidence? The interview starts at 7:30 minutes. Rash Gilman is a long-term anarchist and Quaker living in St. Paul. For people who don't think that Christians can be anarchists, or vice versa, this might be an interesting poke.
Anarchy Radio, October 31st, 2017. An hour. Jay-Z starts by reading from a recent piece from him on the ubiquity and badness of representation, especially as exemplified by language. The anthropological evidence for very early altruism is measured by length of life of people who were severely disabled. Sea life is being wiped out by growing acidity of oceans. Warming of oceans is much more dramatic than realized because the ocean was originally a lot colder than they thought. Ongoing daily huge oil leaks into the Gulf of Mexico. A caller from Cascadia Forest Defense gives some information about recent and upcoming actions. That call is from 35 minutes to 39 minutes. Jay-Z notes that the tarot deck sales are up 2 years in a row and complains about Freedom's new anarchist pro-tech role-playing game and Free Radical Radio's pro-cannibalism episode, but gives a thumbs up to the new Fifth Estate. A European multi-location coordinated action against tar sands development, new religion in Silicon Valley that worships AI, and Saudi Arabia gives the first citizenship to a robot.
The Brilliant, on exclusion. These series of episodes of The Brilliant are Aragorn questioning five anarchists about their experiences with being or feeling excluded from anarchist or anarchist-adjacent spaces. Ben talks most about not fitting in because of project choice and work style. Dominique and Soren talk about identity politics and living with people who are really trying to work through some things. The Mitchell episode is on age, denial, rants, biographical stories, wall talking, culture. New York Jew is an easy excuse, but is also accurate. And how do we listen to people who are not easy to listen to? And Andy Robinson is deeply philosophical and British and has been thinking skeptically about anarchist scenes for many years. This theme was what Aragorn talked about at the Bastard Conference also, and will be written up in the upcoming Bastard Chronicles.
Topic of the week, reading. It's safe to say that anarchists in general put a lot of value on reading. Some groups, like CrimeThink, invest a high amount of effort in producing slick, accessible reading material that helps to create baby anarchists. Some even require potential members to read a curriculum of anarchist writing as a prerequisite for membership. From publishing projects and distros to book fairs and zine swaps, writing is everywhere. Yet there are also approaches to anarchy which emphasize action over words. The writings they tend to produce are handbooks and report backs, if they're writing at all. This was very much my experience in becoming an anarchist. I was much more inspired by seeing a CrimeThink sticker ridiculing the police than Evasion, which I never read, or The Conquest of Bread, which I started and then quickly put down out of boredom. When I was reading, it was zines about organizing and privileged politics. While the passage of time and the shifting of my own thinking has broadened my interests in what anarchists are writing, my coming to think of myself as an anarchist was very much a social experience, coming out of actions with little to do with books. How integral was reading anarchist literature to your experience of becoming an anarchist? What kind of books or zines, articles, et al., were you reading? And what do you think about that material now?
I think that there is a lot of emphasis on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, short form.
Is that even reading?
It involves words. It involves language.
Oh. Men are staring at me.
Women too.
Oh, women too.
You read a lot.
You probably read the most of everyone here.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
You do. No, you do. I think you do. For sure.
In terms of books.
Yeah.
I try to read a lot, yes.
I was just reading a thing, was it Bertrand Russell? No, it was someone who was saying that they would divide their day up into four parts, and at least four parts of 4-hour blocks. Mm-hmm. I'll try to remember who it is, but three of those 4-hour blocks they tried to fill with reading.
Oh my God.
I know, can you imagine?
No, not even a little bit can I possibly imagine.
Totally.
I was going to follow up with you. You read a lot now. Did you always read a lot? Was that an important part of your politics when you were younger, as you were?
Actually, I hadn't read a lot. And now I read a bunch that, it's actually been a long process.
Getting to the point where you read as much as you do now.
Yeah. It's actually because kind of encouraging. It's hard because whatever you read, you know, it's just hard to talk to people about it because unless they're reading the same thing as you are.
Sure.
But yeah. We were actually having a conversation before you wrangled us into this non-consensually, thinking about the style of CrimeThink, if mm-hmm. we're talking about anarchist projects, that their most recent venture probably is not attractive to young.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to appeal to someone else now. Mm.
But that, for example, Days of War mm-hmm. was really vague. Open-ended,
inspirational,
and is exciting in a way that I'm being very generous, mm-hmm. but that is like some of the situationist stuff, which probably doesn't connect with people. But then I remember coming up with people that really loved Evasion, which was like a dumpster dive, mm-hmm. don't wear deodorant, be a vegan, be a badass bro, do martial arts and things like that, mm-hmm. and that people would make fun of me because they're like, you're reading a bunch of books. Mm-hmm. They're like, you think books are cool? I'm doing it. Right. And they're still doing it, and I'm still doing it, and actually I think there's something to be said about being skeptical of academics, Which Adorno, that sounds like it has a really soft ending. I like that.
You know, I think I've said this in other contexts, but I called myself an anarchist for about a year before I really understood that there were a whole bunch of books attached to it. And the first two books that I found that were anarchist books was the reader on Bakunin, the green reader on Bakunin, which is a really thick compilation that I probably never got through, but read enough of to be like, oh, this is not easy. And then I was also given around the same time the SI anthology, and I've read that through 4 or 5 times since, and it's still in probably my top 5 anarchist books because of its diversity, because it's attempting to accomplish so many different things, and it was just so much more interesting to me than Bakunin ever was. You know, I've said this before, but if I lived in Europe, I probably would not have called myself an anarchist, because by and large, in a lot of Europe at least, anarchists, at least in the 90s, you know, were just Civil War reenactors or were more of like a legacy brand, and have had a very hard time modernizing. Whereas obviously in the US, you know, reading the SI and being an anarchist is actually reconcilable.
The question creates kind of a polar ends. And I, in thinking back, I was introduced to a lot of books as a young anarchist. I had a couple older anarchists around me, either much older than me or people who'd been anarchists much longer than me, who were putting reading material in front of me. And but the truth is that as much as that was important and interesting, and I was reading all kinds of shit that I didn't understand and was confusing me and exciting me, I also was a part of a social circle of people. I had friends who were anarchists, and that meant, well, first of all, it was one of the first social groups of people that I had ever been a part of that I actually felt like I belonged in, and not that these were cool people I wanted to be around who were gonna not like me at any minute. And they talked about interesting things almost all the time. And that was probably one of the reasons why I felt like I was comfortable there. And some of it was because we were reading the same stuff, but some of it was because we were thinking, you know, different things, different stuff. And at 25, that was invigorating and exciting, and definitely made me feel like there was, I don't know, possibility. I'm not sure what the word I want is. Hope isn't right, but that there was something, that there was more, and that I could leave being a liberal and still find meaning, engagement, something interesting in the world. And that was a really big deal. But I would say it was probably pretty evenly the books and the social part of it.
Yeah. Well, I relate with that also. This is maybe tangential pop culture stuff, but I think that there have been these incidents that come up on YouTube where it's like extremely politically correct, reactive college students that are at odds with professors. So one of my favorite examples is a recent protest that was against the teaching of classic literature such as Sappho and Plato, mm-hmm. Homer, that people are seeing it as white supremacist and demanding to not have midterms, which I like the idea of not having midterms, but I have a feeling that maybe engaging with these texts is important. And I think the idea of not wanting to engage with reading, and maybe there's a punk rock thing that wants to say fuck this, which I can relate with in some way.
Yeah, I think the thing I react to the most in those last questions at the end of that piece And, you know, again, I feel like I'm repeating myself from prior conversations, but I despise people who draw a distinction between action and reading, or theory yeah. and action. And, you know, for me, I read so that I can use these ideas in my life,
right.
full stop. And anyone who would sort of tell me that that's not actually the case, or whatever in the fuck, I strongly disagree. And I feel like the past 30 years of my life has been a clear indication as to how one, you know, and I'm not saying I did it right, but for me, the idea, yeah, like the ideas that I have played around with, I have always tried to put into practice. And by and large, the people who I've seen who chant action, 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 don't reflect intelligently or in a deep way on the mistakes that they've made. And I continue to see them do the same thing over and over again. And to be more broad about this, rather than just to speak to American activist perspectives, I think that one of the biggest problems with, let's say, Greece out of 2009 was because they knew so well how to sort of enact insurrectionary drama in the context of the streets in December of 2009. At some point, there was nothing left to burn, and they just didn't have the creativity and didn't have the brainstorming capacity to surpass the tactics that they had been using up till now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is on some level a conversation about tactics versus strategy. And the problem with strategy conversations is that there is no right answer. And, you know, whereas oftentimes there are right answers if you're in a particular tactical situation. But the problem is that at this point, by and large, we are in tactical dead ends that need strategic solutions that might not be the right ones, but they really require a lot more thinking and reading than is being done. And by and large, it's being done because people have been convinced that action and theory is some sort of dialectic, you know, rather than two facets of the same thing.
But maybe to be crass, I would say a lot of my response to academia or formal organizations is that, did you know that the lumpen can read? Did you know that minorities, did you know that women,
even women, yeah.
Did you know even women could read words like and write? And that if you're going to reduce us to, any kind of caricature, that bothers me. And
yeah.
And
yeah. That is the part that makes me crazy, is that somewhere in here, some portion of the anarchist milieu, which is supposed to be the radicals thinking, you know, outside of the mainstream, away from, you know, the way that your average Joe thinks, is embraced this fundamental acceptance of anti-literacy, you know, being against intellectualism, against reading, against thinking. That's for those other kind of people who aren't real people, who aren't our people. Like, this is that lowest common denominator baseline anti-intellectualism, anti-education that lives in this country. And of all the people in the world to cozy up to this, it's so many anarchists, and it just makes me crazy and it makes me sad.
Well, I actually would expand on that and say that the issue isn't just anti-intellectualism, but it's the idea that some document, something that hasn't arrived yet is going to save us. And that if we finally have this perfect text that can speak to all of the people, that can, you know, rise, take the people out of the mud and out of the ghetto and bring them up to our level, that somehow we'll then finally all unite and be marching in the same direction and you know, heading towards the same goal. And I think that the origin of all of that is just absolute nonsense. And, you know, if you want to talk about like a plot, like the plot that has led to that being the conclusion, that's a fucking plot.
It sounds biblical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks for joining us.
You are the bitter.
I am the sweet.
Oh.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, this podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Anarchy Muse, narrated by Chisel and a Friend. Thanks to Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. Books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackcart.com. And news and up-to-the-minute commentary are at anarchistnews.org.